Imagine speaking to a large TV audience, then suddenly your voice cracks or whistles, and you don't know when it's going to happen again. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, news anchor Beth Sweeney shares her struggle with a rare speech disorder, spasmodic dysphonia. By telling her story, Beth hopes to help others who may have this shaky voice condition and not know what's going on. We follow Beth's search for a diagnosis and finally some relief. Also, Beth Sweeney's memories of being a traffic reporter, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, being a pageant queen, and her Kentucky roots, growing up in the farm gate capital of the world, and also home to the world's largest apple pie. I'm David James. 2 Main Street is next. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. In the field of mass communication, you have to be able to communicate, either verbally or through images. And if you talk for a living, your voice can make or break a career in radio or television, and now even social media. My guest is Beth Sweeney, a well-known local broadcaster, news anchor at WFIE-TV, and now assistant news director for 14 News, my former employer. Now, Beth recently went public with her struggle with spasmodic dysphonia. Now, that's when the voice box, the larynx, chokes off words in spasms that in severe cases can make a person's speech difficult to understand. Now, Beth is certainly not defined by this condition. We'll be talking about her career that began as a traffic reporter, flying in a chopper above the LA freeways, also climbing mountains, including Mount Kilimanjaro in Africa, co-anchoring 14 News Sunrise, and enduring the puns of Dan Katz, being a wife and mom, and a finalist in the Miss Kentucky pageant. Beth Sweeney, my fellow co-worker and friend, welcome to 2 Main Street. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here and be with you, of course.
Well, thank you. Now, we don't want to bury the lead. We don't do that in the news business. So let's get back to the voice disorder you went public about, spasmodic dysphonia. Now, you did not have a severe case, but having your voice crack on the air is not something you were comfortable with, right?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, I noticed it a few years ago, but did not get the diagnosis until about a year ago that it was spasmodic dysphonia. So it's been a few years of seeing doctors and speech therapists and ear, nose, and throat doctors trying to figure out what it was. And when I finally went to the voice center at Vanderbilt last year in Nashville, that's when I got the diagnosis. Within about 10 minutes of being there, they knew exactly what it was. So that was a relief to finally know what it was, how we could possibly treat it, and how to move forward. So that's when it all started.
Now, it is a relatively rare condition. I know it's a lot rarer than stuttering.
Yes, I would say, you know, one person that's kind of famous that has it is Diane Rehm with NPR,
you know,
one of the NPR hosts there. She also has a tremor, which is common with SD, which I don't have. I'm very fortunate to have a pretty mild case of spasmodic dysphonia. The form that I have is the most common form. And essentially, it's a neurological condition that affects the part of the brain that controls movement. So it causes my vocal cords to spasm. So they kind of slam against each other, essentially, in layman's terms. Specifically, when I'm saying specific words or phrases or certain vowel sounds is when my voice starts to catch, essentially, is what it sounds like, or it sounds strained on the air. So that's essentially what it is. There's no cure for it. There are a few treatments like Botox injections in your vocal cords, which have actually been pretty successful for Diane Rehm and a lot of people that have it. I've tried it a couple of times and I've noticed a little bit of improvement, but it's not completely gone when I get those injections. You can do some different vocal techniques and breathing exercises and things like that, but it's important for people to understand it is neurological, so it is something that you can't control. And, you know, no amount of vocal exercises is going to cure spasmodic dysphonia. So it is treatable in some way.
It is a lifelong condition, I understand, and I read that it affects mostly women between the ages of 30 and 50.
Yes, I was
definitely. So you fall into that category?
I was definitely the demographic when it all started coming on. And while there's no known cause specifically, a lot of research and a lot of patients have discovered that it came on after a traumatic experience in their lives. So what a lot of doctors believe is that SD kind of sits dormant in your body, that I may have had it forever, and something triggers that. So while that's not the case for all patients, I do believe that was the case for me. So I started noticing it when I became pregnant with my son, Oliver, and just slightly, just little breaks in my voice, especially when I was on 14 New Sunrise, I would just start noticing I couldn't get through a sentence without a break in the voice. And I just chalked it up to being pregnant and thought this is some crazy symptom and it's all going to go away. And then it didn't go away, and it continued to progress. So the traumatic experience that I had prior to that was just a couple of months before becoming pregnant with my son. I had a miscarriage, which was traumatic enough, but I also had a complication from an ovarian cyst and a surgery that I had to go through. And it was a very emotional, stressful time. I would definitely say that was one of the most traumatic experiences I've ever had. And just, you know, a couple of months after that is when I started noticing the changes. So I do believe that it is connected to that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's been years of trying to figure out what this is. And none of the doctors that I'd seen before or speech therapists had ever mentioned that terminology to me. So it just got to the point where I thought, I'm going to either figure this out or I'm going to change careers or do something different because this isn't working for me. You know, I'm a perfectionist. I want everything to be perfect. And to be able to do my job in a pretty good way, you know, for many, many years and feeling like I had a successful career, and then all of a sudden, it's like a rug is pulled out from under you. So you can do your job well, and then all of a sudden, you can't control it because this starts happening. So,
well, you're a journalist, and you did some research to find out what was going on.
Oh, my goodness. I was researching. I was calling. I was trying to find anything. My husband and I both just trying to figure this out because we'd never heard of it. It's such a rare condition. So when I finally went to Vanderbilt Voice Center, and they heard me say a few sentences, they had me say certain words and try out a few tests, and they said, you have spasmodic dysphonia. And it was like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders because I finally at least knew what it was. Mm-hmm. And that's when the process began of trying to figure out, you know, what ways, how can I cope with this? How can I live with this?
Now, there's a National Spasmodic Dysphonia Association where people with this disorder talk about their problems and everything and treatments. And it's, I guess it's not as uncommon as you thought.
Yes, once I discovered the Spasmodic Dysphonia Association and a couple of different Facebook groups that I now belong to, I realize there is a whole community out there. And so many people have, you know, far worse conditions than I do. And a lot of them have tremors that go along with it, which makes it even more challenging to be able to talk. But I would watch those stories after I got the diagnosis, and I would watch, you know, video testimonies from Vanderbilt and different places, and the struggles that they would talk about resonated with me because I had been through the same things, like trying to order coffee at a drive-thru and your voice cracks and they ask you to repeat it two or three times, not being able to make a phone call to someone and explain what you need. Those just little things like that would build up, not to mention being on air and being in the spotlight every day and knowing that my voice was going to crack and just not being able to control it and figure it out. So all of those things start building up. And it's also important to note that while you and I are talking here, you don't really notice it much. It is elevated by stress and anxiety, and when you project your voice, which is something that I do on the air. So when all of those things combined make that SD even more noticeable. So a lot of people will say to me, well, I don't notice it when you and I are just having a casual conversation, but it's very different when you're in a stressful situation.
Now, I understand some of these people that I've researched on the internet, they had adductor?
Yes, that's the kind that I have.
ADDUCTOR?
That's adductor? Right. Adductor is what I have, and then there's abductor as well. So there are different forms. Mine causes the vocal cords to essentially, if you're thinking about, you know, two vocal cords coming together, they should be kind of flowing together as you're talking, very gently pressing against each other. Mine essentially kind of slam together, especially when I'm saying certain words. So, David, you'll relate to this. So when we were on 14 News and we would say things like meteorologist Jeff Lyon's name. So Lyon has that long I sound,
sure.
And it's very hard for me to say. So oftentimes I would try to find little ways to get around that. So I would just say Jeff. Or if there was rain in the forecast, so rain, that R and the long A are hard for me to get out. So I would try to change that to showers. So there were different little tricks that I would try on the air to be able to not make the SD as noticeable. So you can imagine how nerve-wracking that was too, going through every single script and trying to think, okay, here's a trigger word for me. How do I take that out or work around it? Or can I make that David's read instead of my read, you know, so that I don't have to say that word. But those were the challenges that you know, I was facing every day.
Well, those are the tricks of the trade. I know when I was anchoring too, there were certain words that I would have trouble with. And I would try to, well, what's a synonym for that?
Exactly.
You know, what can I say? How can I rearrange this sentence? That just, I can't say that properly.
Right.
And I think you kind of work with that. And yeah, you can get around it, definitely. So I know you are a perfectionist, and I know that really bothered you. So now you are the assistant news director. You were an anchor for many years. Was the decision to be an assistant news director prompted by this voice disorder?
It was, actually. I told this story when I first came public with this a few weeks ago. This is only the second time I've ever talked about this. I was really going through a really hard time where my voice, I was really having trouble with the SD. It was very pronounced. And I remember being on air, we were covering some severe weather. I think there were some tornado warnings. And I just couldn't get the words out. And my voice would crack. And I remember walking back in the hallway after that was over and having a breakdown, essentially, an emotional breakdown, and telling my news director, I need a break. I need to step away from this. This was before I got the diagnosis. I didn't know what it was, but I can't put myself through the scrutiny every day. And I was beating myself up over it because I couldn't do the job the way I used to do it. So I took a break with the support of 14 News, which was amazing. And everybody there has been such my biggest cheerleader. I can't say enough about it. You know, take a break, take time, whatever you need to do, figure it out. I got the diagnosis, so I've been going through some treatments. And then the assistant news director position came open. We talked about it, and I thought, maybe this is a good break for me. Mm-hmm. Let's try this and see how I like that. And I think emotionally, it's what I needed at the time because I just couldn't go through every single day feeling like I wasn't living up to my own expectations. So that's one of the reasons that I made the decision to do that.
Did viewers notice the problem?
Oh, yes. I would get emails from people who would not leave their name, would say horrible things. That was really hard. Because even though there are so many wonderful viewers that would send me support or just send me, you know, well wishes when they would notice that maybe something was wrong, it's that one really mean one that you focus on. You know how that goes.
I know.
But that happened a few times. And I won't even repeat what they said because they don't deserve the air that I breathe because it was so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that's going to weigh on you and you're going to, you know, I just wanted to make myself the smallest person in the room at that time when I used to be this very outgoing, open person, and I became somebody I didn't know anymore, and I wasn't being a good mother or wife or friend. So that's when I knew it was time to just, you know, try to get better and figure out what this was.
Yeah. Well, women who are anchoring the news face a lot of extra scrutiny than the guys do. And I know that because I worked with Ann Comas for many years.
Yes.
And anytime she changed her hairstyle, if she had an outfit on that they didn't like, her makeup, anything, any little thing like that, they would just zero in on that and make these horrible comments. And you know, you just can't walk away from those.
Absolutely. You know, I would get the occasional, I don't like your necklace today, or I like your hair better this way. And those I could take because it wasn't attacking my ability to do my job.
Sure.
And to be a journalist and do what I set out to do. So those kind of things I could kind of blow off and dismiss. But when they started honing in on this, which I couldn't control and I couldn't fix, and you know, I knew there was a problem, but there wasn't anything I could do about it. That's when I really just, it just took such an emotional toll on me. And really, and SD is so affected by that because your emotions play such a part in your ability to be able to speak. You know, when you're getting, if you want to speak in front of 500 people or you're going to sing, you know, at an event, your voice starts to quiver a little bit. Well, imagine if you have this, which is uncontrollable, on top of that, you know, it all adds up.
And you're focusing on it. When's it going to kick in?
Yes. And I started to focus on, when am I going to get another mean email from someone? Or is the viewer going to notice this when I mess up this word, you know? So it really just became, I was just in constant turmoil with myself and, you know, wanting to do the best job I could.
We're talking to Beth Sweeney, assistant news director now at 14 News in Evansville. We're talking about this disorder called spasmodic dysphonia. Now, you said this is the second time you've gone public. The first time it was on a podcast.
Yes. Yes. So there is a guy that is an actor, actually, that has spasmodic dysphonia, who started his own.
Is that Shane?
Yes, Shane Hartline. He started his own kind of organization or group to raise awareness about what he has. He's also been involved in the Spasmodic Dysphonia Association, but he essentially decided to do this to go public too. He's had SD since he was 5 years old, but he only went public with it a few years ago. And we have similar stories in that, you know, he's an actor and he's auditioning for shows and trying to, you know, use your voice as part of your craft. So we had very similar stories in that regard. And when he came out and started sharing his story and started having different guests on to share their stories as well, I felt like maybe this is the right time to talk about it. It's just been such an emotional journey for me, and I have shied away from it for so long because I do get very emotional and cry when I talk about it. But I thought, you know, this, I think that somebody's nudging me to say something and be able to talk about it and maybe, you know, help other people.
So what's the feedback you've received?
The feedback's been overwhelming. It's been great. I mean, amazing support from friends and family and people that didn't even know I had a condition because I didn't talk about it a lot, even with my friends and close family members. That's been amazing. I think the most amazing comment that I've received, I ran into a guy just a few weeks ago who stopped me and said, "We watched your podcast. I just want to thank you for sharing that. My wife has a health issue, nothing like what I have, but a similar story in that she was trying to figure out what it was for years and couldn't and started questioning herself kind of like I did and just almost felt embarrassed by it the way that I had as well. And he just, you know, thanked me for coming out and talking about it because it made her feel like she could talk about it too. And I told my husband that night, I said, you know, I never really thought about it, but it really, if there's any message I can get across by sharing this story, it's just don't suffer in silence, because I did that for so long and it was so damaging mentally and emotionally. And I missed out on so much because I couldn't see anything good because I was in such a deep, dark place. But, you know, now that I'm able to share, it really has been like a weight lifted.
Well, I think you're getting a big hug right now from all of our listeners.
A socially distant hug.
We can do it over the radio. We can hug over the radio waves. But anyway, well, I know that you're going public with this is going to definitely raise awareness about this this condition. I had never heard of this before. In the newsroom, we knew something was wrong, and we knew what a perfectionist you are and everything. Something was clicking or something like that, but I think we were afraid to say anything to you. We didn't want to make the problem even worse, and that's the thing about it. I mean, it's a stressful job anyway, going out on the air. The things you say can be libelous, slanderous. You want to be factual, and then you're worrying about your voice cracking and everything. So it just heaps on you. Well, anyway, we're talking to Beth Sweeney, and we're going to talk more about Beth's career, her Kentucky roots. I know, big UK fan.
Yes.
And your husband went to Purdue, so that's got to be another story right there. Growing up in Monticello County?
Liberty, actually. Casey County.
Oh, Casey yes. County. Well, I see. Correcting me right there. Her education, those first jobs in broadcasting, traffic reporting. I want to hear about that. and coming to the Evansville TV market. How did that happen? And those early mornings with Dan Katz, wow, and climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, a lot more to talk about with Beth Sweeney. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is local broadcaster Beth Sweeney, a former TV news anchor, now assistant news director at 14 News. And Beth, we've been talking about your struggle with spasmodic dysphonia, a lifelong condition. You've managed it well, and also going public to educate others about the symptoms, causes, and treatment.
Spasmodic dysphonia, SD. Everybody calls it SD. It's just easier that
okay.
way,
okay,
for
good.
Sure. Well, I mean, I would just say, you know, I was diagnosed about a year ago, so it's still evolving for me as far as learning about the disorder and how everything works and continuing to try different treatments. And so it's a long process. You know, my passion is journalism and being on the air and anchoring and reporting and all of those things. And while I've chosen to, you know, take a break from that for a little bit, you'll still see me on occasionally. I'll be doing some investigative reporting. I've been involved in some of our shows regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. And we are, of course, continuing our Peace of Mind mental health initiative, which is really important to me. So you will still see me on a little bit, and who knows what the future holds. So it's a work in progress. If any of our viewers are listening, I thank you for those of you that have been so supportive. And this has been such a great place, and it feels like home for me now. 15 years I'm celebrating at the station this year, David. Can you believe that?
Congratulations. Congratulations. Now, what are some of the treatments you've received?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, the first treatments that I started out with before I knew it was SD were, lots of speech therapy. But then once I got the diagnosis, we went right into Botox injections, which sounds really funny when you think about it. But essentially, so I would travel down to Nashville about every 3 months for these treatments. They put all these probes all over you, and they hook up like an audio machine to the needle that's going to do the injection into your vocal cords. So what they do is they put those needles in, they figure out when they've hit the vocal cord, and they inject the Botox. So it essentially, kind of like if you think about wrinkles on your face, which most people use Botox for, and it kind of paralyzes that skin and makes it flat again, it's essentially doing the same thing for your vocal cords. So it's kind of smoothing out the vocal cords when they hit each other. So where mine kind of spasm, it kind of smooths that spasm out so that it's less noticeable when you're talking. And it's really like the gold standard for treating SD for a lot of people. It doesn't work for everybody. It's uncomfortable for a lot of people. And it's not a cure. It's something that you have to continue to try. So I've done a few of those treatments, trying to, you know, figure out the right dosage and what's going to work. I've noticed a little bit of change when I have that. I do notice a little bit of a smoother sound, but it's not gone completely. I think for me and for a lot of SD patients, the emotional side of it, because it is a neurological condition, and when you're stressed and you're in one of those anxious situations is when it's most noticeable. It's trying to control that part of it. So a lot of, talking about what triggered it in the first place, anticipating when it's going to come on again, and trying to relax and think about, you know, ways that we can control my anxiety and the emotion that goes along with it. So that's something that I'm kind of working on now. I've been studying a lot with Dr. Jim Bostock, which is he's in Australia, and he has a program called the Vocal Freedom Program. And he talks a lot about the stress and emotion that is connected to SD, and really working on that with patients to be able to kind of get it under control, essentially. So that's kind of what I'm looking at now. I've done a lot of therapy, mental health therapy, and addressing that traumatic experience and trying to process all of that, which a lot of patients have seen that that's been really helpful and successful for them. So it's a lot of different things. So, you know, you kind of just keep throwing things at the wall and see what sticks. You know, Shane Hartline, who I did the podcast with when I first went public with this, you know, told me privately, it's just like going to the gym. You've just got to mm-hmm. keep at it, and something, you know, you'll figure something out, or something will stick that works for you, so that you can at least, you know, control it to some extent.
I think you'd be a perfect national spokesperson to educate people about spasmodic dysphonia. Beth Sweeney, we're talking to her. Now, I understand that this can be an inherited condition. Anybody in your family have this, Beth?
Nobody. And yeah, some people do say that they've had family members that have had the disorder before. Not that we know of, unless there were some, you know, way in my past, in my ancestry. But no, this is a brand new thing for everybody in my family. Nobody had ever heard of it before. And yeah, so this is just something that came out of nowhere, which typically happens for most patients.
Okay, let's get back to your Kentucky roots, growing up in Casey County. Liberty?
Yes,
tell me
that's
about
right.
Liberty, Kentucky.
Well, you know, Liberty is a small town of about 2,500 people. So we have, you know, a couple of stoplights and a few places to go out to eat. And it's a really small town. My dad was actually mayor of Liberty for about 12 years when I was growing up. So I'm very proud of that because I think he did a lot for the community. Casey County is the gate capital of the world, believe it or not. So a lot of farm gates are made there.
And, now that's interesting.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
The gate capital of the world.
That's right. Tartar Gate, which is the Tartar family there, has a huge gate factory there and then across the country. So you'll probably see those driving down the road on a semi someday. If you see that, you'll know it came from Casey County. We're also the home of the world's largest apple pie. So every year we have the Casey County Apple Festival. And there's this huge pie. They actually have to use a forklift to get it into the oven. So, yeah, we're famous for apples and farm gates.
A lot of orchards there?
Yeah, lots of orchards. Yeah, that's a big thing there, too. Yeah.
Were you Miss Apple Pie of Casey County?
I was Miss Casey County, which does go, you get, as part of your reign, you get to go serve the apple pie at the Apple Festival. So, of course.
Was that your entree into the Miss Kentucky pageant?
You know, I think that's when I kind of got started in pageants, was, you know, when I was a teenager. I did a few little local pageants and then learned about the Miss America system, which is a scholarship organization as well. And I always try to, you know, make that clear. I think a lot of times when people ask me about being involved in pageants, you know, there's a typical stereotype that goes along with it. But I am really proud of being a part of the Miss America organization. You know, it's the largest provider of scholarships for women in the world. I, through my competition, I paid for my entire college career, which was great. And I did a lot of work with community service. So through that organization, you have to have a platform that you it's almost like you're running for office, you know, and you, whatever you're passionate about, you do a lot of community service, a lot of public outreach. And my dad and I actually created a literacy program for children back in my hometown in Casey County through the America Reads program, which Clinton started, you know, several years ago. And I just was able to really reach a lot of people through that. And that's my most proud accomplishment.
Now, you were a finalist in Miss Kentucky.
I was. I was first runner-up in Miss Kentucky. And then, of course, Miss Kentucky goes on to Miss America. Mm-hmm. So it was a really great experience. A lot of amazingly talented and smart women involved in the program. And yeah, I have friends for life from that experience.
Now, when did you go to the University of Kentucky?
So I was at the University of Kentucky. I graduated in 2001. So I was there for all 4 years and then went on to grad school at Northeastern University in Boston. Mm-hmm. So I went there right after that.
Journalism field?
Continued in the journalism field there, yep, and had a wonderful experience. And then I came back to Lexington and worked for a local cable channel for a little bit, and then got the job for the WB channel out in Los Angeles as the traffic reporter. So I was up in the helicopter doing that. Yeah, so that was a really neat experience.
And any chases that you
No, no chases. I mean, I was mostly doing traffic stuff. We did have to cover a fire that we came across in one of the canyons as we were flying up during the morning show that we did have to cover. But that was a really cool experience to be a part of that. And then that kind of led me back this way, which is interesting. I did that for a while. I knew that I really wanted to anchor and get into reporting. So I just started applying for jobs, and the anchor position at 14 News, the morning anchor position, came open. And I applied and came out and interviewed and got the job. And you know, you think, oh, I'll be here a couple of years, and then I'll move on to the next market, which is typically how it works in the news business. And I met my husband, who's from Jasper and has, you know, a chiropractic office here in Evansville. And that was history. So I'm here now for a long time.
So... are you considering a Hoosier, or have you gone that far yet?
You know, David, as a Kentucky Wildcat, I can't be called a Hoosier. I mean, I love my Hoosiers, but, you know, I bleed blue, that's for sure.
Well, and your husband went to Purdue, too.
Yeah. So, you know, he's not an IU fan, of course.
No,
he's
of course
a Purdue
not.
Fan. So he's okay. You know, he'll sit on the couch and watch UK basketball with me. He's a huge football nut. So I'm a huge UK basketball nut, obviously. So he's cool with watching and cheering on the Cats.
What'd you think when the University of Evansville beat UK basketball? Did you get a lot of grief?
I still haven't lived that one down, that's for sure. You should have seen my cell phone that night when that happened. Boy, it was lit up. Yeah. But they deserved it. They played a great game. So.
Now, okay, you got the job at 14 News Sunrise. Mm-hmm. That had to be a change of life, getting up really early in the morning, and then teaming up with Dan Katz.
Yes.
Tell me about that partnership.
Yeah, so I think I'm actually the longest running female anchor on 14 News Sunrise. I was there for 8.5 years. I started that job. I didn't know what I was getting into at the time. My goodness, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning and doing the show from 4:30 to 7 every day. For a while there, we had a show on our other channel from 7 to 8 as well. So it ended up being a really long morning. Remember that? And then, you know, doing the midday show as well. So it was just a great experience. I mean, Dan and Byron and I kind of became like family. They were my brothers. And they, you know, it was always entertaining. Everybody would say, Beth mm-hmm. keeps us in line. So
that's
I was kind of,
right.
You know, even though I was the younger one of them all, mm-hmm. I was kind of like the older sister to
but
the two
of them.
But
you kind of snap your fingers when they get a little off
I would rein
track.
It in. I would rein it in even on air. So
That's good. That's good. They needed
exactly.
it. And they still need it.
They
definitely.
Do.
Now, we're going to shift gears now. We're talking to Beth Sweeney, Assistant News Director at 14 News. Now, in 2008, unfortunately, you became the lead story on the news that we played that dramatic call you made to 911. You want
yes.
to recall that, Beth?
Wow, that's been that long ago, huh? Yeah, so you're talking about when...
you had an intruder.
I had an intruder in my apartment, yes. So
kind of a serial intruder,
yes,
wasn't
it? Which we learned, you mm-hmm. know, shortly after this happened. So, yeah, so I had a really traumatic experience. Of course, I was kind of new to the area. I've been here a couple of years, mm-hmm. and I remember it clear as day. It was like late afternoon, early evening, and of course, I had been on the morning show that morning and was in my apartment waiting on my laundry to be done over in the clubhouse, you know, and I went to go down to retrieve the laundry and saw clothes laying at the bottom of my stairs inside my apartment. The stairs were inside and I froze. And I remember thinking, what is going on? Is somebody at the bottom of the stairs? Did I drop some clothes from the laundry? What is this? And I quickly realized those were not my clothes. So I called 911, and which a lot of people heard on 14 News. And the minute I got on the phone with 911, the intruder came out of my bedroom. So I learned that he was waiting in there for me. And I just got really lucky that I saw the clothes at the bottom of the stairs before I made a move anywhere. And he ran out, and if a lot of people may recall, he was caught, thank goodness, from surveillance video from the apartment complex that showed his vehicle coming into the apartment complex. And I believe it was a car dealer who had sold him the car that saw it on 14 News, recognized the car, and called authorities. And that's how they were able to track him down. And I'll never forget, I think it was the next day or two when all of that happened, and police had called called me. I was back with my family because it was obviously such a traumatic experience. I was staying with my family in Kentucky, and police called and said, we're going to need you to come pick him out of a lineup. And so I was at the grocery with my mom. We jump in the car. We get ready to drive back, and I get a call a few minutes later, and the detective says, he just confessed. You don't have to do that. So it was
great sigh of relief.
Yes, exactly, a sigh of relief. And then it turned out that he was in trouble with a lot of people. And you'll remember months later, he escaped from the Warrick County Jail, which was another traumatic experience because he was on the run for a few days. So at that point, I moved in with my dear friend and stayed there until they caught him again. And he is now serving, I believe it's a life sentence in West Virginia, mm-hmm. For the rape of a young child.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was very lucky. Yeah.
And I think after that event, you had some handgun training?
I did. You know, Stephanie Sylvie, who was our investigative reporter at the time, kind of talked me into that. She said, you know what? You need to protect yourself. Why not? Let's just go take a class.
I can hear Stephanie saying
yes,
that.
Yes, totally.
Kind of taking you under her wing.
Yeah. So we did a little bit of that, and I got some training, which was interesting to learn about. That was interesting to learn about. But, I've never touched one since.
So let's move on. What are some of the big stories you remember covering for 14 News?
Well, you know, David, I started here in the end of September, just a month or so before the November tornado hit. So I was still, I think, doing some training and reporting. I don't believe I had gone on air to anchor on 14 News Sunrise yet. I was still learning the ropes. And then that November tornado hit. So that, of course, was right when I began my career here, which is still the most memorable story that I believe I've ever covered, just being able to share stories of families who lost loved ones or lost their homes. That was a time I'll never forget. And I remember we did a lot of community outreach during that time. I remember we served dinner at an event to thank first responders. I think we had a telethon to raise money for families. And, you know, I had only been here a couple of months, and I just remember thinking, wow, this is a community here. I'm so grateful to be a part of this. So many people care about each other and have reached out to help. And that really kind of sealed the deal for me and made me realize I'm in the right place and where I want to be at this time.
Well, it's always amazed me, too. Whenever we put on these telethons after some tragic event, the outpouring of support from the community is overwhelming.
It is unbelievable. And all three states, too, no matter, you know, if it happens in Evansville, we've got people from Henderson and Owensboro that are helping and vice versa. It's really great to see the really close-knit community we have.
What are some crazy things that have happened to you on the air, Beth Sweeney?
Well, you may remember this one, too. I believe it made nightly news with Brian Williams when we had a little earthquake, and it happened during 14 News Sunrise. I don't think Dan was working that day, so it was just me and Byron. And that clip has been shared everywhere, but we were, I think it was in the 4:30 half hour, I was tossing at Byron for weather, and all of a sudden the camera starts shaking. We didn't know what was happening. So that was definitely probably the most memorable moment on air.
Did you dive under the set or anything?
I wanted to. I remember looking at the lights, and the lights were shaking, and I thought, what do we do here? But it happened so quickly, and it was over really quickly, so thank goodness everybody was okay.
Well, my guest is WFIE's Beth Sweeney. Coming up on 2 Main Street, we're going to talk about climbing mountains, meeting this chiropractor, marrying him, being a mom, balancing home and work, and her volunteer work as well. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and if you are just joining us, my guest is Beth Sweeney, a local TV news anchor, now assistant news director at 14 News. She recently went public with her struggle with a speech disorder, spasmodic dysphonia, where spasms actually choke off words. Beth is spreading awareness about this condition, its causes, and treatments. Now, your husband is a chiropractor. Did he play any role in the diagnosis?
He did. I mean, he was, you know, my biggest supporter from the very beginning. And
Reed.
Yes, Reed. For the longest time was the only one that knew what I, internally what I was going through and the challenges of trying to figure out what this was. So Reed researches everything anyway, and he's a huge health nut. He's very much into health and wellness and fitness, of course, as a chiropractor, and does a lot of work on sports teams. And he's had some interesting cases as well. So he really was the one that kind of kept pushing me to keep searching and to keep, trying things. I worked with some local therapists here and then in Louisville, and then eventually went to the Voice Center there. And he's the one that actually made the call for me. I was in such a dark place at the time that I just didn't see a way out. And he made the call. He talked to the doctors and he said, "We need to get my wife in. Let's figure this out." And he said to me, I remember just saying, "You can't give up. You've got to keep trying. Let's do this. Let's see where we go with Vanderbilt, and then we'll go from there." And then it ended up being everything. It ended up being the answer. So he's been researching from the very beginning, and of course has just been my number one cheerleader the whole way.
Well, how'd you guys meet?
This is a really funny story. So I knew, we kind of knew each other but didn't know each other. So I remember being invited by Dennis and Diane over at WIKY to come on as a judge for a contest they were having called Dr. McDreamy. So they were looking for the Dr. McDreamy of the tri-state. So different listeners could nominate their favorite doctor in town. And
when the TV show was really
when Grey's Anatomy was so big and Dr. McDreamy was on there. So people would submit their pictures in, and I got to be a judge. So I remember looking through the pictures and listening to the listener stories about their doctors and why they like them the best. And I remember seeing his picture, and I knew that this was going to be the winner. So he ended up winning the competition. At that time, that was it. Then that was over. Well, it may have been years later or months later. I don't remember the timeline. I got a call from my dear friend, Randa Stewart, who used to be on 14 News Sunrise, who said, "I have somebody I want to fix you up with. He's a local chiropractor in town." And it turned out that it was Dr. McDreamy. So I had seen his picture. He obviously knew who I was. And we went on essentially a blind date because we had never seen each other in person. He took me to the New Harmony Inn for dinner, and it was a great night. Yeah. And then that was it. The rest was history after that. So I remember when I got married, my sister got me the sweatshirt that had Dr. McDreamy on it. So we always call him that.
Now, your mountain climbing passion, when did that start?
Well, I don't know if I would call that a passion, David, because I'm a one and done when it comes to mountain climbing. That's for sure. My husband has a passion for it. So Reed has climbed 3 or 4 of the 7 summits so far, and his goal is to climb them all at some point. So he had climbed a couple of mountains before we decided to do Kilimanjaro, and somehow he talked me into that. And he said, it's just 5 days. We'll pay the extra money so that we get the really nice tent, and they'll carry your stuff up the mountain. We had porters and that kind of thing. So I thought, okay, this isn't too bad. I can make it 5 days. Mind you, I had never camped in my life, not even at the local state park.
And you're going to Kenya.
And I'm going to Kilimanjaro. Yes. And so that was definitely a challenge, but I will say that it changed my life. Like, if I ever doubt myself, I think, I climbed a mountain and I never camped in my life. I'm very girly, and I would much rather stay in a hotel than in a tent. But it was an amazing achievement, and we met some amazing people through that. So I'm really proud that I actually summited and finished.
Did you need any oxygen when you're up there?
No, I didn't need any oxygen. My oxygen levels were really good, actually, the entire time.
I know, but sometimes they're not.
No, exactly. And we did have one man that was in our group that had to be taken out on a helicopter to get treatment. He couldn't make it to the top. So it is definitely challenging, trying to acclimate yourself. So we did a little bit longer journey than some people so that we would have time to get to a base camp and then acclimate, come back down and get your body really used to it. So there was a lot of, I played a lot of gospel music on my way up. I had to call on Jesus to get my way to the top, but I made it, and I can say I did it, but I don't think I'll ever do it again.
Okay. Now, I know you're big into volunteering. You volunteer for ARC Crisis Center, Habitat for Humanity, and that you talked about the literacy program as well.
Yes.
So that has to be part of your life.
Yes, of course. You know, ARC Crisis Child Care Center is very near and dear to me. Just not long after I got here, I got an invitation to join the board there, and I was a board member for several years. For those that may not be familiar, ARC Crisis is a nonprofit child care center. It's the only one of its kind in Indiana that provides free child care to families who are in crisis or in stress, under stress. So it's an amazing organization, and they just provide so much for so many families. So I've been involved in that for years. I'm now on one of the committees for one of our fundraisers, the Fairy Tale Ball, which didn't happen this year because of the pandemic, but they just do amazing work, and I'm really proud to be a part of that. Children are my passion in any way.
And Oliver, your son, is now in school?
Yes, he just started kindergarten. Yes, so that's been a big leap this year. He loves it so far. So we've already been in school for about a week and a half. So he's gone through, you know, learning the new rules with the pandemic and wearing masks and being socially distanced. And, you know, what I've learned through him and other classmates is just how resilient kids are. You know, they're doing great with it. They don't complain about wearing the mask. They're they're really doing well. So we're glad that everybody's happy and healthy so far.
Okay, I'm a news guy. I'm curious about how COVID-19 has changed your news approach there, how you cover the news.
Dramatically, that's for sure. You know, I remember that day in March when everything changed. You know, we had our first COVID pandemic special, one-hour special that aired, I believe it was March 12th, and the next day all schools shut down in Evansville. We cleared out our newsroom. There are essentially three or four people in our newsroom every day now. All of our reporters work from home or work from their cars or wherever they are telling their stories. Our whole sales department is working from home. It's a much different scene. So you typically come into a hustling and bustling newsroom, and now everything's very quiet. It's ominous at times when you think about what we're in the middle of and what we're covering.
You have temperature checks too?
Oh, absolutely. We actually have a temperature gauge on the wall. We have to take our temperature every day when we come in. Everybody wears masks. We have the plexiglass partitions everywhere. So lots of rules and regulations, but covering it, it's overwhelming at times because there is so much information. I mean, my inbox for my email is triple what it was before this because there are so many stories, and the phone rings off the hook with people sharing their stories, whether it's, you know, someone who has a family member who's been diagnosed or wants to report a long-term care facility that has potential cases or someone who still hasn't gotten their unemployment checks. I mean, the stories are endless, and you want to be able to share as many of those as you can, and trying to get all of that into, you know, the limited amount of newscasts that we have is challenging at times. And, you know, I always tell people if they say, why haven't you covered this story or have you seen this story yet? We're working on it, and it's, you know, it's every day there's something new, and we wish we could get to every single part of it, and we, you know, do our very best every day to do that and utilize our website and social media as much as we can to share what people are going through. And it's just a whole different feel to the newsroom and to the way that we share stories because most of it is COVID-19 related.
Now, what's the difference between anchoring, going in and anchoring, and then being an administrator?
Very different. But of course, you know, all of these people have been my peers for so long, and now I'm, you know, in that kind of administrative role, which is definitely different. But everybody's been so great and welcomed me with open arms, and that's been really lovely to see. I work really closely with reporters now and looking at our newscast and kind of taking a step back and being that second set of eyes, you know, with producers. Do we have this in? Are we including this? How are we best serving our community? So there's a lot of that. And then talking about, you know, other ways that we can serve our viewers and meet their needs through, you know, 1 hour specials that we try to do to focus on different aspects of the pandemic. And going back to school, you know, that's the biggest thing that everybody wants to know about right now is, you know, what's going to happen as schools start to open up and, you know, the weeks go on. Are we going to see cases come down? Are we going to see a spike? That kind of thing.
And going into a newsroom every day is a new experience. You never know what you're walking into.
Yes.
And that's, I think that's the excitement of the business. I always enjoyed that part of it.
Absolutely. That's exciting
to know. It's not monotonous.
No, definitely not. That's true. And, you know, sometimes we have this huge big marker board that we have up where we list every single county in our viewing area, and we put the number of positive cases that we have at the time, the number of recovered, the number of deaths, unfortunately. And sometimes coming in and looking at that every day, it can be a little overwhelming. You know, everybody's stressed out in this pandemic, and to kind of see that and see the numbers rise every day, sometimes that's hard to see. But yeah, there is something new every day, and there's always some new research or some new story to tell of someone in the tri-state.
Well, this is probably one of the biggest stories probably in your career and my career as well, the pandemic of 2020. And I wanted to pass along one more thing. I went to the dentist this morning, and the people at the dentist's office say hi to Beth Sweeney. We miss seeing her on the air. We love you, Beth.
Oh, that is so kind.
So I wanted to pass it on to you.
Oh, that made my day. And David, thank you for having me. And, you know, you've been such a mentor to me all those years and checking my scripts and making sure I was accurate and just being a friend. And I really appreciate that. And it doesn't go unnoticed. So I'm very grateful to have you as a friend.
Well, thank you so much. And ditto to that. Beth Sweeney, thank you for being my guest on 2 Main Street.